All right. We are rolling. We are live. What is up, guys? It is the guys from Plant the Spirit. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. And we're just getting things rolling here real quick with the live stream. As Michael, we got some news that fell in our lap today that I don't think any of us, when we woke up, were expecting to hear today. And that is that Gus Malzahn announces his retirement as offensive coordinator, as a football coach. A 35-year coaching career comes to an end effective immediately as of today, Monday. And Florida State promoted Tim Harris Jr., a former wide receivers coach and co-OC, to the OC coach. He's also going to serve as the wide receivers coach. And we got news that Mike Norvell is going to be calling plays. So what we're going to do tonight is we wanted to get a chance to kind of do a live reaction once we got off work and got home and got settled in, to just kind of share our thoughts on this, what it means for Florida State, what this could mean going into next season, and just share our reactions to this. So I appreciate everybody who's joining in on the live show right now. Obviously, we're going to try and take some questions and comments throughout the show. We'll probably take a couple breaks to address those. So if you want to drop them in the chat, I believe we can only see Facebook and YouTube. I'm not sure about X or not. So, man, again, we appreciate you guys joining. And so, Michael, let's just dive right in, right? Let's start first, obviously, with the news. We're kind of, you know, now that Gus is out of the way, we'll just kind of talk a little bit about Gus, his time at Florida State. We'll put that in a box, bury that, and we'll move on to what it means for Florida State. And so I think the first thing is, 1 year you get with Gus, it felt like it was going to be a short-term experiment anyway. Yeah. When you brought him in. Obviously, with the news of his retirement, I don't think this was a really overwhelming surprise for a lot of people, right? Because you had the rumors that he was going to retire at the end of his tenure at UCF. Maybe he was getting fired there. Maybe he was going to retire. You talk him into coming to Florida State to put off the retirement. You let him skip the recruiting part, skip a lot of the duties that come with head coaching nowadays, and just get back to being a football coach. He comes in for a year. I really just don't think it went like you thought it was going to go, from not only his side on the field to the Mike Norvell relationship. You know, we had questioned early on, like, how is this going to work with the power structure of, you know, these, we know Division I football coaches are alphas, right?
Right.
And so you had Mike Norvell, who's a guy who's a kind of the alpha personality, worked his way up to a head coach at a major Power Five program, who is now going to kind of have to almost take direction from Gus Malzahn, or Gus Malzahn, who's a almost more accomplished head coach than Mike Norvell, having to take direction from Mike Norvell. So we knew it was going to be a little bit weird in there, in the power structure. And it just didn't, from the press conferences and things, it just didn't seem to be going smoothly. And so then it comes to an end. And I mean, yes, Gus Malzahn in 2025 did improve Florida State's offense marginally. I'll say that, because again, we'll get into some of the numbers and stuff later, but you also improved it from one of the worst offenses we've seen in program history. So, you know, the whole, it was like the 6 yard in yardage and first in the ACC in yardage. As we always say on Plant the Spear, yards don't win games, points do. And we know this offense struggled to score, especially on the road. You know, man, it just, I think this is a change that they knew was coming. They promoted Tim Harris Jr. to co-offensive coordinator, seemingly for almost no reason last month. It was kind of like, okay, well, I mean, I guess you just want to keep him around. And then also, you know, we had talked about before where we were like, you know, it's kind of weird that they took Jaden O'Neal, who's not a Gus Malzahn type quarterback. He's more of a pure pocket passer. Then you also add Malachi Marshall, who's 6'2", 170 pounds, and not much of a runner as well. And so my thought was, I think they're going to move on from Gus Malzahn. I just think it's going to be in 2027, pending that Mike Norvell is still here, or maybe they all go. So I don't think this is a major surprise. I just think the timing of it is a little weird. So I'll kick it to you for some thoughts. Again, we're just letting people kind of get in the chat here, and we're going to share our thoughts on this whole situation. But, you know, the contract renewal date was February the 1st. So this was the timeline that it was going to happen. But all signs had kind of pointed that he was going to be back for next year. And so, but I still don't think it was a complete surprise to the people inside the building there that this could have been a possibility.
Yeah, I think to the people inside the building, to Mike Norvell, to Michael Alford, to the team, to the staff, this my assumption is this doesn't come as a surprise necessarily, meaning this was always this kind of thing that was kind of hanging on by a cloud, like hanging in the clouds there. They were just trying to figure out whether or not he was going to coach in 2026 or not. You have to go back to when he got hired. Like you talked about, the contract was a very unique contract. He's top five, Jesse, top five highest paid offensive coordinator in the country. Okay.
Yeah.
He was likely, potentially might, maybe was going to get fired from UCF. He stepped away. He considered retirement. Mike Norvell convinced him to come here to Florida State. He comes, he wants his contract so he doesn't have to recruit. He doesn't do anything. All the thing he does is, you know, work with the offense. He doesn't do any recruiting unless they come on campus, and he gets to call the plays, right? That was the biggest thing that he was going to be able doing. So then you get him here, and I think immediately, you know, I think he had to make an adjustment. He wasn't the head coach. He'd been a head coach for 15 years, and now he's having to make an adjustment to just being the guy who called the play. You heard that so many times in press conferences when he would get asked about big picture thing. He would say, well, I'm just a play caller. I'm just a play caller. You know, that's all I do is call plays, right? That's what he would say all the time. I'm just an offensive play caller. I'm not the head coach, you know? And so I think that was a huge adjustment for him as well. I think there were probably situations and opportunities where him and Mike Norvell did not see eye to eye, whether it was play calls, whether it was scheming, you know. And the thing was, what probably frustrated Mike more was the fact that at the end of the game, when you go to the post game, it's not Gus up there answering those really hard questions about the offense and why they can't score more than 13 points against Stanford. It's Mike Norvell. And what is Mike? He's not going to throw Gus under the bus. But I bet there were probably 10 to 15 different play calls Mike would have made differently in that game. And so I think that frustration built over as well, too. I think at the end of the season, Mike went to the administration. This is what we've heard. So what we've heard is that Mike went to the administration and said, hey, I would like to move on from Gus. The contract buyout was $4 million. Obviously, if they weren't willing to buy you out, Mike, weren't willing to buy out Gus either, right? So Gus wanted to leave. You heard that he was interviewing for other jobs, right? And so that wasn't going to happen. So now it became this big game of chicken. Who could break first? Would it be FSU? Would it be Gus Malzahn? They didn't. They got through this, you know, signing period, national signing day, transfer signing, portal window, and then boom. I think this is Michael Hinton speculation. Okay, this is scuttlebutt, not scoop. I basically think that what happened is Gus was just like, I'm just tired. I'm done. I think he went to FSU. I think FSU probably came and said, hey, let's maybe figure out a negotiated buyout. You're not going to get the full $4 million, but we'll work somewhere in that sense. Because, you know, Gus ain't walking away from that much money. And right. I think they came to an agreement. Gus resigns. And I know the timing, and I'll throw this back to you on this. I know the timing looks bad. I know this just adds more to the disorganization and the just the frustrations we have with this football program. But in my mind, this is actually decent news for Florida State football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a couple of things I want to touch on is obviously we know he left some money on the table at UCF, like you said. So I think they probably are going to pay him a little something to get out of here. But also, you know, again, he was, like you said, man, he was one of the top five paid offensive coordinators in the country last year, and the offense wasn't really that great. And so, you know, we had said on the show before where if Gus does move on, because there were rumors of him retiring during the season last year, not during the season, but during the season, there were rumors he might retire after the season. And it is worth mentioning that there are some family health problems. I know his mom was having some health issues. I've heard his wife maybe having some health issues as well. And so I do think that is at the root of it, right? It's just the end of a long tenure of 35 years of coaching. You've made a lot of money. Health and your family is just more important to you right now than dealing with this. And so I think that it was just time for him to make that decision, and that's just the way it shook out. But at the same time, like, what would you, as far as Mike Norvell moving as the play caller, like, what would you have had to pay to go get a top OC to come into Florida State to, you'd have had to pay another top five type of money to get another play caller to come in here when at a time where we know they're probably trying to budget in case they have to fire Mike Norvell. This is why we probably saw a lot of the internal promotions and things like that. And so, you know, it was a little bit weird that you brought Gus's offensive line coach, you brought his wide receiver coach, you just hired his running back coach. So I think all the signs pointed that he was going to stay. But at the end of the day, I think Mike Norvell, you know, we had said if he leaves, Mike Norvell should be the one to take over the play calling, because the CEO role just really didn't hammer out like we thought it would. And so what else are you paying him $10 million for? I mean, people do forget, and we're going to spend a lot of time talking about Mike Norvell and his play calling, but people forget Mike Norvell was brought here because of his offensive mind and his offensive right. system. And we'll right. talk about that more at the end of the day. But, you know, again, when you talk about his decent news, I tend to agree. You know, we were joking around before the show. Like, I have a small, and I mean marginal, uptick of excitement for 2026 now that you have Mike Norvell calling the plays, because I do think Mike Norvell, as we talked about, from what we saw in 2024, and again, we're gonna open that box here in a minute. From what you saw in 2024, Mike Norvell has a much lower floor when things go bad. Gus is probably always going to be that guy that can get you to a certain level. But there are two truths about Gus Malzahn. He does have a low ceiling on his offense. It's not an offense that goes out and puts up a bunch of points. And they do pad stats against bad teams, right? Everyone talks about the yards and the things that they did on the offense, what they put up, the total offense numbers. Man, if you go adjust the East Texas A&M and the Kent State game out, it does not look as pretty. I mean, when you look at some of the numbers they had, in four of their final six games last season, they were held under 21 points, and they couldn't break the 14-point barrier in three of their final four road games. They just had a hard time scoring. And, you know, looking back at Mike Norvell taking over to play calling here, I know 2024 was really bad, and hopefully it was an aberration. There was a lot of problems that went into that we'll discuss here in a minute with bad quarterback play, bad offensive line play, and bad receivers, which, again, Mike Norvell is ultimately responsible for that. We're not hiding from that. But Florida State did average 34.6 points per game in 2023, and that number probably would have been higher had Jordan not have got hurt for the last few games when you couldn't really score points. So you'd have probably been somewhere around what you did in 2022 at 36.1 points per game. Now, granted, that was with Jordan Travis, and the concern that I have is the success with Jordan and without Jordan. But the 34.6 and 36.1 was better than any season average that Gus Malzahn had all the way back to 2014. Oof. And so, like, it's just, man, Mike Norvell's offense does actually have a higher ceiling, right, if he gets the right pieces in place. And I do think that when you talk about having Herb Hand as your offensive line coach, you know, because Alex Atkins was a bum of an offensive line coach, like having Herb Hand, having Deuce Robinson as your receiver, and having things like and Danzy and all that, I think that does help you not avoid that. It helps you avoid that 2024 situation, right? Because we've seen what Mike's offense can do. Even in 2021, when they weren't great from an offensive perspective, they were still running the ball. I think they averaged almost 200 yards a game that season. So they can run it. And I think the other thing to mention here too is, I mean, let's be honest, guys, you have an offense that is rooted out of the Malzahn system. And so I don't think it's going to change that much to begin with, right? You're going to see a couple of different things. Like, Mike doesn't run his quarterbacks right. as a pure design quarterback run as much as Gus. He has more route concepts, more passing formations and stuff like that in his offense. So you're going to kind of open the offense up a little bit more, but a lot of it's built out of the same tree. So it's not going to change a ton, which is one of the reasons Gus said he was interested in coming here to begin with, because it was an easy mesh, right? And so, you know, we're going to talk about the Tim Harris aspect and all that stuff too. But one comment that I do want to touch on, I'll give my piece and then throw it back to you, is what Jeff said here, Jeff Hill, our guy, Jeff, where he says, man, you know, the only problem with this, I think, is the timing of it. And I tend to agree with Jeff. And the reason I say that is, and I know we're going to get into this where, you know, maybe the timing was kind of out of Florida State's hands because it was more of a Gus Malzahn thing, the chicken situation that you talked about before. The timing really is the only thing that I find a problem with. And the reason I say that is because I think when – this is the question that I ask myself when I hear this, right? If you were going to be running Mike Norvell's offense in 2026, would you have went out and got Ashton Daniels at quarterback? I don't think so. I think you probably would have went with a guy who was more of a pure passer. Now, with that being said, we do know from watching Jordan Travis when he was banged up and couldn't really run the ball well to when he was able to run it versus what we also saw with the Mackenzie Milton, the James Blackman, a immobile DJU. We know that Mike Norvell's offenses are better with a mobile quarterback because they are rooted out of that Gus Malzahn system. To me, I just think when you only had Kevin Sperry in your quarterback room and you had to go out and get other guys, I don't think you would have went out and got Ashton Daniels as your bona fide starter. But to the point that we were talking about before the show, I do think now that you're kind of switching the offensive systems, the quarterback competition is going to be more open than it would have been if Gus would have stayed. Like, I thought with Gus here, Ashton Daniels, that is the guy. That's who they brought in. I think you do have an open competition there. And I'm not saying Ashton Daniels can't work in the system. I just think maybe you'd have rather had more of a pure passer quarterback to run Mike Norvell's offense. But all in all, man, I mean, it's not that much of a different system. So I don't think you're going to see a lot of change. I'm actually kind of excited. As long as we don't see like 5'9 receivers blocking for 6'6 receivers on screens and stuff like that, like we did in 2024, like as long as we get away from that, I think Mike Norvell's offense has a higher ceiling than Gus Malzahn's did. And so I'm actually kind of excited to see it come back and kind of expand the playbook. You know, I mean, RIP to the Danzy reverse. Maybe he'll keep that in the playbook at least. Maybe we don't run it twice a game every game, but you know, there's some things he can take from it. But all in all, man, I'm with you. I don't think this is a negative for Florida State. I really don't.
Yeah, like, and to Jeff's comment, you know, yeah, the PR of this, like I've said, the PR of this isn't great, right? It comes at a time when even Caffeinated Kate, as she says, like, it feels like there's just no stability in the program.
It does.
I totally get that sentiment. I totally get that, right? Because you just feel like it just every day there's just bad news. Somebody's leaving, somebody's dipping, somebody's leaving, somebody's holding FSU for hostage for more NIL, more rev share, right? It just feels like over, and then you get this news. What I would like to ask you, No Nation, is this. Just for a second, just reframe this for a second, okay? I will take you all the way back to 2020 when Mike got here, okay? Literally, probably either the 1B or 2A worst offensive line when he inherited, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He had James Blackman as quarterback. He had, who else played that year in 2020? Was it just James Blackman?
I'm not sure. I'll look it up.
Okay, you'll look it up while that. Well, whatever it was. Even that offense in 2020, they put up points.
Yeah.
Points. POINTS. Okay. They put up points. They didn't just get a bunch of yards. They put up points. Now they got blown out a couple games and only went 3-6. Three and six, whatever. But they were able to score the ball. 2021, when they went 5-7, they put up points. They scored. You weren't going to hold down. It was all about the defense at that point in time, right? Then obviously we know what happened in 2022, 2023, right? They score points. They can move the ball. Even when Jordan wasn't running as much, they still, you know, the Pitt game obviously comes to play where they were running actual routes. Like, can we just celebrate the fact, Jesse, that we're going to have actual route tree combinations come back to the offense? I'm really excited for that. It's not just a go route or a short dig. We're actually going to have some other stuff that we can actually use
right
in the offense. And so what I would say to you guys is this. Yes, it doesn't come at the greatest time, but also it doesn't matter. It just came. Praise Jesus. It came. I've been saying this from day one. I've not been a big fan of Gus Malzahn. I thought his offense was antiquated and outdated at the BCS championship. That's what I thought it was done. Okay. You don't have Cam Newton. You don't have Trey Marshall running that show anymore. So I like Jesse said, my hope for the season just went up like this. Boop. Just like that.
Yeah.
Because, man, if there's one thing I can trust, right, is that if the GM position is being taken care of by the new guy, right, John, if he can take care of that, and we got a decent enough level of players, the play caller and Mike, who's now freed up and don't have to worry about GMing and CEOing, and he can just focus on the offense and rah-rah this team, that Memphis Mike, play call Mike, I will take in my corner any day. He was, when he got to FSU, Jesse, and I'll throw this back to you. He was one of the – this wasn't just like us making up. This was the nation. He was one of the best play callers in the nation.
Yeah, and I mean, you think back to – in 2020, they did use Jordan too. Okay. And, you know, the thing is, to the point that we had Ride or Die Seminole said, you give Mike a decent quarterback and an O-line, and he can score some points. And I agree. We saw that at Memphis, right? And we were just kind of like, what the heck happened here with the quarterback situation? And, you know, again, I go back to, like, you had Jordan. And this is my biggest concern with Mike, right? The problem is he averaged around 37 points per game with Jordan Travis, and this is including the end of 2023 when he was out, and 20 points per game without Jordan Travis. That's my biggest concern, is what is he going to have at quarterback?
Yeah.
Now, I do think, I will say this, I think you're probably going to blend some concepts from Gus Malzahn from that offense, especially keeping Tim Harris on as your offensive coordinator. I think you are going to blend some things between what Malzahn ran and what Mike Norvell likes to do, because you kind of have recruited for that. I will also say this too, you know, this is kind of a side note here, but there was some, I feel, first off, let's go back to 2024. This was a forced change anyway. Yeah. We all know that. Like, Mike Norvell was forced to give up play calling because it was so bad. That's at least what everybody believes, to lead him to go out and get this offensive coordinator anyway. So I don't think Mike really was happy about that to begin with, but he knew what he had to do to save his job because it was the worst offense we'd ever seen. And in the process, there was some carnage, right? And whether you believe this or not, because a lot of us don't believe this, is you did lose Luke Kromenhawk in the process. You did lose the Brady Smigel, whatever you call his name is.
Yeah.
You did lose him as well, because they both stated they did not really want to play in Gus Malzahn's offense. Now, I also believe there were some other things involved with that. You know, Luke wanted to be named the starter, and the Smigel kid, I think Ohio State came in, or Michigan came and visited him like the next week. So, or the week before he decommitted. So there were some other things like that. But I also will say, if you were going to move on from Gus in the near future anyway, because this is something that I've been talking about for a while, that my biggest concern with hiring Gus and not keeping him for long term was, the further you get into his tenure, the further away you're going to get from recruiting players that fit a different style of offense. Yep. So let's say you fired him and you went out and you got Cade Bell from Pitt or whatever the case may be. You're so far into the other type of players now that you're going to have to go. It's like changing, not maybe not to this extreme, but changing from the triple option like Georgia Tech had to do, right? And so by only letting him be here and recruit for that 1 year, you know, signing that type of players, the damage is not as severe as if you had let him run another 2 to 3 years to the end of that contract. So I will say that is one thing that's probably good there if you're going to transition back. I also think, you know, when you talk about Tim Harris Jr., it's obviously clear Mike Norvell is going to be calling plays, because you're not going to put, in a year that we thought last year your job was on the line, in a year that we assume your job is probably on the line, you're not going to hand over the keys to the offense to a guy that has very little experience as an offensive coordinator. And most of the experience is not good anyway, right? I went back and looked up a little bit. He was at Florida International from 2015 to 2020. He was on staff. Then he took over as the OC there in 2020. They only played 5 games during the COVID year. FIU went 0-5 and averaged 22.4 points per game, 105th in the country. And I was like, well, it's FIU. You know, they're terrible. It's hard to win there. Well, in 2018, they went 9-4 and averaged 34.6 points per game. In 2019, they went 6-7 and averaged 26.5 points per game. He was also the co-OC.
Was that when Cristobal was there at FIU?
I think it was
in Oregon.
No, it was before that. He was there before. I think he went to Oregon with Willie. But then you also look at, he was the co-OC in 2022 at UCF, but we know Gus was the play caller.
Right.
He leaves. He comes back in 2024 as the OC, and that was the worst year that Central Florida had on offense. Now, I know they had quarterback problems too, but he just hadn't had a whole lot of success at the offensive coordinator position, so they weren't probably going to let him be the play caller anyway. This is going to be more of an Alex Atkins type of situation, maybe even Kenny Dillingham, where maybe he does call some plays in certain situations, mostly game planning and things like that. I also think he probably will be better as an offensive coordinator than what Alex Atkins was, because, you know, he wasn't really good at much of anything other than recruiting and wasting talent. But yeah, man, I do think when you talk about the combination of the front office too, to your point that you brought up, in 2024, Mike had to do everything, right? He was the CEO. He was the personnel management. He was everything. He was the offensive play caller and all that stuff. And so at least now that you have the GM in place, Mike Norvell doesn't have to worry about the roster side of things. He doesn't have to worry about NIL stuff. He can just literally focus on tailoring the offense, doing the things that he needs to do. And, you know, you got more people on staff now that's able to help out with that type of stuff. And so, yeah, man, I don't think it's a bad move to put him back at the play caller, because, like we said, man, he was literally brought here because of the offenses he produced at Memphis.
Right.
We saw those offenses at 2022 and 2023. We saw what they were able to do. And so, you know, getting into the 2024 season, we'll just kind of address that for a second. You know, yes, it was the worst offense in the history of probably Florida State, like since they stopped wearing leather helmets, right? It was bad. They were like 15 points a game. It was awful. But at the same time, and this is not to make excuses for Mike Norvell. Like, we both said before the show, like, this sounds weird because we both agree that Mike Norvell should have been fired last year. And we still believe he should not be the head coach of Florida State right now. But just from an offensive perspective, when you go back and you look at 2024, you brought in DJ, which was a mistake. It was a mistake. But DJ lost his mobility. He wasn't, we believe he was hurt because he had the knee sleeve for most of the season until he got hurt and didn't play anymore. So he lost his mobility, and he was behind just a god-awful offensive line, one of the worst offensive lines we've ever seen at Florida State. And then you also had receivers who couldn't catch. You had the highest drop percentage in the entire country. But even then, man, you look at the BC game. You had a wide-open touchdown in the end zone, and he threw it to the bricks instead of the guy, you know, in standing in the end zone. How many times was Malik Benson open over the middle, and you just overshot him? And so, like, it doesn't mean that there's not the plays weren't there in 2024. The personnel just sucked. There's no other way to say it, you know? And so again, he's responsible for that, but now you also have help with the personnel. You have the GM side of things that can help them get that. So the biggest concern for me is where you're at with your personnel this year, you know, maybe the limitations at quarterback. But, you know, I think when you compare like the 22 and 23 years to 24, and then you look at 26, I trust Herb Hand, right? Yeah. Like you said, when we were talking before the show, I trust Herb Hand until he gives me a reason not to. That offensive line took a massive step last year.
Yep.
I don't know that's going to be as good this year because you're bringing in kind of lower level transfer pieces, not a bunch of G5 or Power 5 starters. But if you give them a decent O-line, Trey Wisner was a 1,000-yard back on a playoff team at Texas in 2024. You know, I like Chroma. So, of course, we had Trey Benson back then, but you got good, similar running backs to what you had in 22 and 23. You have a receiver like Deuce, who is a better version of Johnny Wilson. You don't have a Keon. You know, Keon was a little banged up there, but Danzy's a guy that's flashed. I think and I'll kick it back to you on this. I think you're more well-equipped to see, from a personnel standpoint, what you saw in 22 and 23 rather than what you did in 2024, with the understanding that you do have a limitation at quarterback because you don't have Jordan Travis, a guy who came up in the system, was a field general, had a lot of command of the offense at the line of scrimmage and things like that. That really did make a difference. And then the only other thing I probably would have liked to see them do different was I think you probably could have maybe handled your receiver situation a little bit different, right? Because we knew the way you treated the receiver position was, okay, well, Gus Malzahn features one guy, and then you scheme open number two, you don't even really know your number three exists. Well, in Mike Norvell's offense, you spread the ball out a lot more. Yep. And so I do think you maybe would have tried to retain LaWayne McCoy. I think maybe you would have went and shopped for another good third receiver. So maybe you would have handled that a little bit different, which is why I think given the personnel you got, you will see more of a blend of Mike Norvell and Gus Malzahn until maybe you get to a Malachi Marshall at your quarterback, right? A Jaden O'Neal as your quarterback. I also think it opens the door for both of those guys to be your quarterback this year. So I'll kick it back to you on that, man. But really, you know, again, I think Tim Harris will be fine in his position, right? He's not going to be the play caller. I think he'll be fine there. But I think Mike Norvell, with the pieces you got, I don't think it's going to be as good as 22 and 23, but I don't think it's going to be as bad as 2024 because you're just better equipped than you were that season.
Yeah, you know, with Tim Harris, again, I agree with you. I think it's going to be more of that Alex Atkins blend to Kenny Dillingham type of situation where you have a better, you know, I think the biggest problem with Atkins was he was lazy, one. All he did was recruit and then didn't develop. And there's been speculation that he also didn't really assist greatly with game planning, right? So if you have Tim Harris that can really help out with the game planning, you know, obviously you have a whole scouting department that's focused on offense or defense. So they're going to scout the defense for you. Then Tim Harris can put the game plan together. Now that you have a GM, you're not focusing on the day-to-day of dealing with NIL and all this other contract and all this stuff. And your GM is also doing the scouting for future players to come. So now you're just recruiting and you're working with Tim Harris to put a really great game plan together, right? And then you're going to go into the game, likely, probably calling, I would imagine, maybe 90%, 85, 90% of the plays. There might be some special situations, like you said, that where Tim Harris takes over. Now, with that being said, when it comes to this 2024 offense, you know, as again, you have to lay the blame, good credit or blame, at Mike Norvell's feet. He was the head coach. He wanted DJU, right? That has been made very clear. He wanted DJU. He believed that he could take DJ and do what he did with Travis and turn him back into this golden quarterback again. You know, he wanted DJU. That turned out to be a disaster. Now, whether or not, you know, DJ would have been better, had, you know, obviously he had the injury, so who knows? He could have been slightly better. It didn't work out. It was a terrible decision. He hired Alex Atkins and allowed Alex Atkins to rest on his laurels. He didn't develop that offensive line, literally the worst offensive line, either worst or second worst we've ever seen in Florida State history. He went out and recruited those wide receivers. This is a former wide receiver coach who's now head coach, calling plays. Those are his wide receivers. Now, obviously, he had Ron Duggins. Ron Duggins is no longer on staff. He had to fire him because those receivers were terrible. But also, you know, they couldn't get open. And then when they were open, you had a quarterback overthrow him. He was throwing more touchdown passes to Bricks than he was to actual players. Like, so he had all that. But what didn't change was that when those wide receivers wanted to get open or tried to get open, they were open. They were schemed open. There have been so many games that could have had different outcomes had we could have had a quarterback to hit those players, right?
Yeah.
Now, we said the same thing about Tommy. So I don't want to discredit Gus in that sense, is that there were so many plays where there were wide receivers open that Tommy just couldn't hit because he was either undercutting or overcutting or not even in the same ballpark as them. So I want to make sure we say that about Gus as well, too. But Mike Norvell was one of the best play callers in the country coming into Florida State. Mike Norvell had in 21 and 20 and in 22, 23, right? Even when Jordan wasn't running as much, Mike Norvell had that offense scoring points. And I think, and I take a little bit of different take with you a little bit on the wide receivers. I actually think you have three wide receivers who can actually run this blended offense. You have Deuce, you have Danzy, and you have Boggs, who came back.
True.
And I think if Boggs can stay healthy, Boggs is going to be your short to mid-level threat. I think your Danzy is one of your deep threats to go get deep balls, as well as speedster. So you can use end arounds, you can use jet motions, all like that with him. Like that Norvell loves those jet motions. And then I think, of course, you got your Swift Army Nice and Deuce, who can do everything. He can go deep. He can do your short to mid level threat. He can he's going to be your run blocker. Both all those receivers are over 6 feet. They're going to block well for you, right? So now you don't got 5'9 guys trying to block 6'2 corners and all that stuff. I actually think you have a decent set of, I think Deuce leading the way. And I think you have two decent set as your X and Y that can actually, or your X and Z's that can actually run that for you. If you can get the tight end situation figured out, because Mike Norvell loves a really good tight end, right? So you can get that figured out well. I think you can put, and if Herb Hand produces what he has consistently produce, I think you can put a decent offense out there that can at least score enough points to keep you in a game.
Yeah, and I want to go back to touch on the 2024 real quick with Mike. And I appreciate Mike's comment here. He's a member of the channel, and so I just want to address that real quick. And the 2024 offense was on Mike Norvell, right? It was his offense. And the one thing that I do want to say, though, is to your point where Tommy and them had accuracy issues with the quarterback and all that stuff too. So we don't want to act like it didn't go anywhere, you know, either the blame goes both ways, but I was just, while you were talking, I was just looking up some numbers real quick. And, you know, we talk about this all the time. Like, it does ultimately fall on the coaches, right? Everything ultimately falls on the coaches, but the players take blame in this stuff too, right? They're not coaching them to go drop passes. And so I did look it up real quick. Last year in 2025, Florida State had 310 passing targets and 17 drops. They had a 63% reception percentage. In 2024, they had 26 drops in 319 targets, so nine more targets, and a 57.4% reception percentage. And we know Duggins was not a great receiver coach, right? And so that is the big thing for me, is like a lot of 2024 was just because we had bad quarterback play and a garbage offensive line and receivers who dropped the ball every time it hit them in the hands. And so I think there is some things to 2024 that you have to understand, right? That part too. But I also think, you know, it's like some people I've seen in the comments say that really the biggest, this one right here by Augino, Mike's biggest failure was not making a move on Atkins along with, you know, Dugans and some of those guys. Like that was his biggest, that was his biggest failure as a coach at Florida State. And I mean, it was hard to maybe justify some of the things when you talk about, you know, going at a 13-win season or coming off a 10-win season. Yep. But, I mean, you know, Mario Cristobal replaced their defensive coordinator after a 10-win season, and look at what it did.
Look
so
what it
sometimes
did.
You just have to be willing to make those changes. And that's his, that's been his biggest fault, right, is the lack of changes that he made. But at the end of the day, 2024 was just – it was just such a combination. It was just a crap storm of things that happened all at the same time. You were coming off the snub and all that stuff. That doesn't mean we're going to go out and blow everybody up by 40 points this year. We're not saying that at all. Like, I don't know that you have the personnel to do that. You still have some limitations. That, but you certainly did not have a proven 1,000-yard receiver on that 2024 team. Nope. You didn't even have it on 22 and 23, right? Nope. You got probably about as good of backs as you did back then, and the offensive line is probably about as good as, you know, what you'll have this year. And so I do think – given the pieces that you have, you know, like we talked about, man, I'm not saying we're going to score 40 points a game, but I do think the potential ceiling for this offense is higher with Mike Norvell and his more modern offense than Gus Malzahn with maybe a higher floor, right? It's just you hope that you don't see 2024 happen again or else we are going to win two games probably. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, man, the move has been made. And so you're going to have to deal with it anyway. And like we said, you're going to save some money with Gus not hanging around and not having to go pay another offensive coordinator, which is, again, which is something that, you know, we talked about with the front office staff. Like if you have a guy, basically a GM, Mike should be calling the plays. He makes $10 million a year. Like he should be calling some plays. And so I don't have a problem with it because, again, who are you going to go get that's a better offensive coordinator than what Mike Norvell has shown to be in the past, right? Yeah. That you weren't going to have to go pay through the nose, potentially also pay a Gus Malzahn buyout. And we know they probably weren't going to do that. I mean, you still have to understand in the context of the reality of the situation that Florida State is in, what their options were, right? There, we've seen them promote an assistant wide receiver coach to quarterbacks coach, which that might look a little weird now, right? Because we said, okay, this guy can be the quarterback coach because Gus Malzahn's coaching the quarterback. So that does throw a little wrench in things too, how that's going to work out. But you did see them do a lot of the internal promotions because it felt like they were moneyballing this year a little bit, right? And to go back to what somebody said was, you know, I think it was Jeff said where his biggest concern is really the defensive line. And that's the thing, man. For me, the worry for 2026 and what it means for this upcoming season is still the defense.
Oh, it's still the defense, yeah.
I still think the offense is going to be okay. I'm not saying it's going to be stellar, the number one offense in the country. I think it's going to be okay, right? But I do worry about that defense. I think it might be a limiting factor, and you might have to score some points to win some games. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see how that part plays out, but that's more of a concern for me than the offense, right? I thought coming in this year with even with Gus, I thought it was like, oh, the offense will be okay.
Yep.
It's not going to be great. But, I mean, again, like, I know Gus the biggest fear for me with losing Gus is how we're going to beat Alabama because the guy just knows how to beat
Alabama.
He knows
how to beat Alabama. That's
so
true.
He is an elephant hunter, if nothing else. There is that. But at the end of the day, man, like, 13 points on the road to Stanford, you know, 11 points or whatever it was at NC State. Like,
yeah.
What are we crying over that that left?
Like, here's what I'll say. And I know, I think it's T-Town 813 Trouble City guy. He's like, this is a throwaway year. Four verts, slot fade, RPO counter. That's all from Norvell. Cause go back. Okay. Mr. T-Town, I'm not mad at you. I'm just telling you, go back and watch 2022 Florida. Okay. Cause I did. You don't just see four slot fades, four verticals. You see route trees. You see high level, mid level, low level combinations. You see calls that have the defense just befuddled. Okay, Mike Norvell's offense, and when he's humming, is a level of NFL style offense. Just from the gun, more spread, run heavy. Yes, he loves counter. But also, you have to remember, too, that counter became a much bigger thing because Alex Atkins wanted to run counter more because he felt like he could train the guard and the tight end or the guard and the tackle to move around and get more leverage and all those different things. So, again, I actually trust a Mike Norvell offense much more than I trusted a Gus Malzahn called offense, because you were able to actually not just run. I mean, Gus Malzahn and his playbook maybe had 20 plays,
Yeah. And then when you had Tommy get hurt, you were just limited to bad passing. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
With Mike Norvell, at least if the runner gets hurt, the throwing is going to be there, because you're going to still have a wide open playbook. And if you don't believe me, we've already talked about it. Go back and watch the 2023 Pitt game, where all the wide receivers are basically hurt, right? Jordan's not running the ball. So all he's going to do is it's him and Lucas, right? They're just throwing. Did I get that right this time?
Ja'Kai Douglas.
Ja'Kai Douglas. Yeah. There it is.
It's his cousin, close enough.
But, I mean, he has 14 catches for 140-something yards. I mean, and they were throwing all over the field. That's how they won that game. Was the passing offense. So I just want you guys, again, to just, like, I get it. This looks bad. This is another knock on Mike Norvell. And Jesse and I have been ones who've said from the very beginning, when this all went downhill, he shouldn't be coach. We still feel that way. But this should give you just a slightly bit of hope, because a more cleared, less foggy, less bogged down Mike Norvell, who actually has something to do with his hands now, something to do with his hands, who could get back to play calling, that's a Mike Norvell that I'm willing to get in the ring with.
Yeah, no, I agree. And, I mean, again, you think about it. Like, I was just looking at some numbers real quick here. And, I mean, you look at Florida State this year, averaged 218 rushing yards a game. But, you know, if you kind of filter out for the Power Five, I'm sure that number comes down significantly. But they averaged over 200 yards per game in 2022, and they ran 214 yards a game against a lot of really good teams. I think they had 8 straight games with 200 yards rushing. Yeah. So we talk about the pass, but there's going to be a lot of running concepts that Mike Norvell is able to do as well.
Right.
You know, they ran the ball pretty well, almost 200 yard a game average in 2020, when they had more of a mobile quarterback and weren't really throwing the ball a whole lot there. So, again, like you said, I do think it just kind of expands the playbook a little bit here, because, you know, when the hinge for Gus's offense was always having that quarterback factor to be able to run. And, you know, the thing is, man, like when you talk about that, when his ankle got banged up and he really couldn't run the ball, you were just stuck with a bad passing quarterback, and everybody knew you were going to have to try and run the ball. You couldn't. Right. And it was, you know, people talk about you're just throwing it up to whoever with Mike Norvell. Well, what was our offense last year?
Exactly.
Chunk it to Deuce or run the ball. That was pretty much about it. Like, how many times did we say last year, can we get a crossing route? Like, do they exist? Can we throw the ball underneath? Maybe.
That'd be nice.
You know, and you just didn't see that a whole lot. Right. And so, yeah, I mean, I agree with you there on that. And again, yeah, talking about, you know, just feeding a certain receiver, the game that you brought up with Pitt, where he didn't have Johnny or Keon because they were both injured, I don't even think he had Jaheim Bell in that. Maybe he did, maybe he didn't.
No.
That was actually Jordan's highest passing total of the entire season when he didn't have his receivers. Now, when we come back to that is – the one thing, as I said before, that worries me the most is the quarterback position, because Jordan was a Band-Aid that healed everything, right? Jordan was a very efficient, very familiar with the playbook, had a lot of freedom to adjust a lot of things and make calls. You know, he had been in the system for basically 5 years before he became a starter. He was a part-time starter in 2020 and 2021, so he had a lot of experience. You're not going to get that this year, right? You didn't have that with DJU. You're not going to have that with whatever quarterback you decide to go with, whether it be Kevin Sperry. He's got a year in a different system. So you're not going to have that. So to me, I think that is going to be the bottleneck more than anything this year, is the quarterback position and not being able to have more of that pure passing aspect. But I do think you will see them probably run the ball a little bit more with the quarterback than they would have otherwise, now that you do have Ashton Daniels, if he does end up being your starter, because you'd have been crazy to add him and not use that. And, you know, in the best seasons that you had, Jordan still ran the best offense that you had, which was 2022. Jordan ran for like 600 yards. So you're still going to want them to be able to run the ball with the quarterback, right? Jordan Travis had 82 attempts for 417 yards in 2022. So that was your best offense that you've had since he's been here. So I think you are going to want to see a lot of that, right? I think you're going to want to see a lot of quarterback run. But again, I don't know now that you're opening the it up to Norvell's offense, that I don't know that Ashton Daniels is going to be your guaranteed starter.
Well, yeah. Well, and I think you have to look too at the runs that Jordan had too. If you go back, that some of those are designed runs for sure, right?
Yeah.
Whereas a Jordan lot of
was more of a scrambler.
Was a scrambler, right? He scrambled. He kept plays alive. Like sometimes,
which Ashton Daniels is pretty darn decent at too now.
Well, Mike Norvell sometimes would say, you know, Jordan made me right. Meaning, Mike would call a play based on the look that he thought he saw. Jordan would go to the line, and the defense would change the look. Jordan would change the play, or he would run the play, but then the look changed, you know, post snap, and Jordan would make him right by scrambling, right? You saw that a lot. I mean, what that one play that gets played over, that or replay gets replayed over 1,000 times every time they show, you know, anything Jordan Travis, is the game against Florida, where he basically he you know, gets out of like 20 million tackles and almost scores a touchdown there. Well, that was Jordan making Mike look right, right? So that happens for sure. But in a Mike Norvell offense, you're going to see less of the design QB runs because you have more route combinations to run. You're going to see a lot more running back run, right? Because they're going to actually want to feature a running back. And I will say this too. What was clear about Mike Norvell prior to Gus getting there was Mike had 1 to 2 backs he focused on, right? And when it was humming, he had Trey Benson and what was the walk-on guy? Oh, I can't think of his name.
Tre'Shaun Ward.
Tre'Shaun Ward. Those are the two kind of backs that were like humming, right? So I'm excited also by the fact that this could be a Wisner and Chroma deal, right? Maybe sprinkle in a little Singleton to kind of change it up a little bit. But my imagination, you're really going to see mostly Chroma and Wisner kind of run this thing. And I like that. I think that's a better way to go about it. And I would imagine that that you'll see a lot more just kind of reading the offense and depending on who it is. Now, if it's Ashton Daniels, you know, obviously the accuracy problem is a big deal, right? And so Mike is going to have to figure that out. And I think you fix accuracy by running a lot more RPOs because those throws are not that they're a one read throw. It's read or give, right? And it's a one read throw. I think another way you fix the accuracy issue is you force the quarterback to only read one side of the field. So you're saying this is the play side. If it's not there, go, right? You're giving him one, at most two reads. And that second read is often the hot read on a blitz. Other than that, it's one side. Here's your first read, maybe a second read. If it's not there, you make me look right, right? That's what made Mike so successful with Jordan Travis. The problem is when you got DJ, you didn't have a third option. He couldn't run. So if the first option wasn't there and the hot read wasn't there because or they weren't catching it, he was dead in water. Plus, your offensive line gave you maybe a second, maybe 1.2, 1.3 seconds to get rid of the ball. So I'm not trying to defend Mike. I'm just saying that the evidence points to this could be a slightly better offense. Now, really quick, and I'll throw this back to you on the defense. If you look back at 2021, 2024, on the latter half of 24, and this year, for some of the games, it was, do you have enough defensively to stick in the games where the scoring gets going, right? Do you have enough? And right now, we have said from the very beginning that the last snap of the game season happened, that this defensive line is thinner than a glove stretched from here to South Carolina. That's how thin that defensive line is, right? And
yeah,
is our linebacker play going to be better? What about our secondary? Like, I'm more worried now about the defense still than I was the offense. And I think the offense just got that much better.
Yeah, or at least had the potential to get better, right? And when you go back to Norvell, while you were doing that, I was pulling up some numbers here. And, you know, Mike Norvell had – or Jordan Travis in 2023, 52% of his passes were under 10 yards. They used the middle of the field, 181 attempts, the left side of the field, 57 attempts, and the right side of the field, outside the number 75. So they were throwing the ball over the middle of the field. It was a lot of short game and stuff like that. Whereas, you know, you were just kind of spray and pray with a lot of this year, right? I mean, you're talking about passes this year over 20 yards was 23.2% of your passes where you're just kind of chunking it up to Deuce. Even with Jordan, that was only 17.8%. So it was less percentage in basically more attempts. And so, you know, again, man, I think that's the thing. Like, we're not saying that this is about to come out and be the number one scoring offense in the country, right? Certainly not. But at the same time, you also have – he did put back-to-back top 20 offenses together in 2022 and 2023. He's had a lot of top 20 offenses there at Memphis. I think to what Andre Bugs here says is, like, Marshall can pass, but he needs to gain weight. And I think that's the problem is I think you're going to have to – to me, I think you're going to have to blend the concepts this year to make Ashton Daniels work because I don't know that Kevin Sperry's ready. He could be. But I don't think he's – I don't know that he's ready. And I don't know that Malachi Marshall is physically ready. Now, the pass game I think is on point. I think he's okay. But I definitely think that that is probably the future plan, which is why when they took him, I was like, okay, well, we must be about to get away from Gus Malzahn. I just didn't think it was going to be this soon. But, you know, to his point, he said, I think it's a battle between Sperry and Marshall for Norvell's offense. And I agree that's probably how it should be. I just think it's like, what do you do with Ashton Daniels this year? He's the most experienced guy. He has flashed a little bit as a passer, but he's also shown to be very inconsistent. And so what do you do? But that's why we talked about before. I think the quarterback competition is truly
real
wide open now. Yeah. Whereas I think before it was going to be Ashton Daniels' job to lose under Gus Malzahn because he fit the system so well compared to Malachi Marshall. And he had a lot of experience edge over Kevin Sperry. But I still think it comes back to, yes, I think the depth on the defensive line is going to be my main concern going into this year. And so I think that might be the one limiting factor, right? You might have to win some shootouts. And, you know, man, again, like I know you had the UVA game where you were able to just go blow for blow with UVA and it was a double overtime 40-point game and stuff like that. But how many other times did we see them just other than against cakewalk teams that Gus is very, very good at? Blowing out and running up the points, like, man, they were not a very high-flying offense, right? And there was times where, you know, you put up 45 points on LSU with Mike Norvell. You put up, you know, a good bit of points in a lot of these games, 45 points against Florida in 2022, 38 points against Duke, who had a good defense under Mike Elko in 23. So you put up a lot of points in some of these games. And so that's why we're saying that I think you have a higher ceiling with the offense under Mike Norvell. It's just we also have seen the floor fell through the core of the earth. And so that's what you don't want to see happen. But it's, a lot of it's going to come down to the defense anyway, because to the point that people talked about, you know, in 2022, your offense was absolutely humming. The limiting factor really was the defense. After Fabian Lovett got hurt and you really couldn't stop the run up the middle, that's what cost you a lot of the game. That's what cost you the weight game for the most part. They just ran it right down the gut and you couldn't do anything about it. In 2023, the defense had a lot to do with that, right? The offense, we saw the cracks in the offense in 2023, right? You had some kind of low-scoring games. They couldn't really run the ball like they wanted to, so they were forced to pass more often, kind of the inverse of 2025, where, like, you couldn't really throw it like you wanted to, so you had to run it a lot.
Yep.
But you had a dominant defense. Man. Even when you lost Jordan Travis, the defense is what carried you through, right?
Yep.
And so my main concern is the defense, right? I mean, I had the same kind of feeling before Gus Malzahn announced his retirement.
Yep.
But again, I think it's – I do think he got better at linebacker with the Southern Miss transfer and the other guy that came in from Nebraska, and you're returning basically the same guys that you had. So, I mean, it's not probably going to get worse. It's going to get a little bit better with the additions. The secondary I do worry about a little bit. The defensive line, I don't think you have any, like, top-tier guys on the defensive line. But the ones that you kept were the ones that I liked, right? James Williams, man, you know, he's got a future at State Farm. Like, get up out of here. You know what I'm saying? Like, you couldn't keep Daryl Jackson anyway because he aged out.
But
I liked Deontay McCray. Yeah. I liked the twins. I want to see what you get out of Kevin Wynn.
Yeah.
So I think you kept some good pieces there. I just think you did a poor job in the portal of adding other pieces, right? To bring that up a little bit. So it'll be a defensive limitation, but yeah, man, I don't think this is a situation where I'm disappointed that you lost Gus Malzahn because now you're going to go from 8 wins to 4.
Right.
We just did a schedule preview the other day.
Yeah, we did.
Go watch it. Both of us had Florida State in the 3 to 5 mm-hmm. win range.
3 to 5, yep.
That's kind of what we had. And honestly, I think the floor is still probably 3 wins with Mike Norvell calling plays or not, because we saw the floor was 2 wins in 2024.
Yeah.
You know, and once you see that in there, it scares you because you know it's in there.
Yeah.
But I also think, you know, Gus Malzahn, for everything that he did, man, he only had really that. I mean, he had the season with Cam Newton, right, when he was offensive coordinator. And then he had the 13 season. But other than that, man, it was just kind of always
mediocre.
It was mid, right? It was just kind of always a mid season, mid offense. And so you did see Mike Norvell lead a lot of top 20 offense. You did see him average 36 points a game in 22. Probably would have been 36 points a game.
Yeah.
You know, in 23, had he not have got hurt. So, you know, I don't think it really changes your floor a lot, because of the other limitations that you have at quarterback and the defense.
Yeah.
But I do think it raises your ceiling a little bit because you do have a feeling that Mike Norvell could go out and average, you know, 36 points a game.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, I want to get to something that Caffeinated Katie said. She said in the chat, I like the idea of Sperry for the sake of developing the QB position in-house. I hate the idea of buying a new QB every year in the portal. What I want to say is, like, we would all love to see some in-house development. But I would caveat with saying, I think you're starting to see a trend here.
Yeah.
In college football.
Example,
the Miami, not even just Miami, Indiana. I mean, look, go to Ohio State. Julian Sain, he's a transfer from Alabama, right? You know, obviously Ty Simpson, homegrown. Obviously, what's the Georgia guy's name? I always forget it.
Oh yeah, I forget his name.
Yeah. Those are becoming the exception now, where you have a guy that you've recruited that you've brought
Gunnar
in.
Stockton. Shoot.
Gunnar Stockton, right? Even
my wife's gonna be mad at me for forgetting that one.
Yeah, Dante Moore for at Oregon. He transferred in from UCLA. Like, you're starting to see that what's happening is it's harder to recruit these quarterbacks and keep them in the fold, because they're coming in freshman year and they might be willing to sit freshman year. But they're not willing to sit their sophomore year. They want to play now because they're trying to maximize, especially with this new 5 for 5. You have 5 years to play for 5 years. They're trying to maximize their NIL potential, rev share potential earnings as quickly as possible. So they're not sitting as long as they used to sit now with the transfer portal and unlimited transferring. So it's hard to keep these players in-house anymore. Now, that's not to take away from the fact that Mike Norvell, outside of Jordan Travis, has screwed up. And I use that word. He has screwed up QB development at Florida State. We have not developed a QB to be anything of significance outside of Jordan Travis. Mackenzie Milton, bum leg. James Blackman. Well, we know what that was. You went with Brock Glenn. You went with, I mean, I could keep going. Garcia. I mean, all these Purdy's. Like, it has not been good, for sure. I do think this wave of era of college football that we're in right now, you're going to continue to see the 1 to 2 year QB rental that are coming in. Miami's just done it with Mensa that took from Duke, right? Indiana went out, got Turner from TCU. You're just going to keep seeing this because it's so hard to do that. I'd love your thoughts on that, Jesse.
Yeah, no, I think something that I think you've seen both styles work now, mm-hmm. right? Because not last year, but the year before in 24, I guess it was, I think 6 of the 12 teams were transfer quarterbacks, right? And so the playoff teams.
Yep,
and so you're seeing that it can be done both ways. But the problem is, and I don't know what their checkbook looks like. I'm going to be completely honest with you. We have shown that we prefer to shop at the bargain bin.
At the bargain.
For quarterbacks, right? We have shown that. We're not going out spending $6 to $10 million like Miami is. And so I think that is a limitation. Like, if you're going to go out and you're going to have a high level quarterback, gosh, I hate even giving them credit, Cam Ward, a Carson Beck, a Darian Mensah, a guy that you don't have, because let's be honest, like, let me give Miami credit and throw a little shade at the same time, because I can do that. You know, they picked on Mike Norvell early on. We develop. That's all we do. We're development you, and you guys just have to go get everything from the portal. And now half your team comes from the portal. And
more than half.
I don't even know why you waste a scholarship on a high school quarterback, because you just go buy one every year. But you're bringing, like, Cam Ward You surrounded him with better pieces, but he was what he was when you brought him in.
Right.
Carson Beck was what he was when you brought him in.
Right.
Right. And Galaxy King said, we lied.
We lied.
We were just playing about that. And then you bring in Darian Mensah, who's already good. So you just skip the development phase. But to Cade's point, I think you want to see it. It's nice to see from a recruiting standpoint that you can develop
and can let's get them. Yeah.
And let's be fair, man. The biggest knock on Mike Norvell since he's been here is the quarterback situation because he had plenty of success at Memphis with quarterbacks. And for some reason, it's like the Bermuda Triangle of quarterback developments in Tallahassee. It just makes no sense. And I did see T-Town earlier mentioned that Mike Norvell had 2 years with Jordan Travis, which I'm not sure what he's talking about with that. Like maybe just as a starter, but he came here in 2019. So Mike Norvell had him in 2020, 2021, 2022, and 23. He played in 8 games in 2022.
Yeah.
He played in 10 games in 2021, and he was your starter in 2022 and 2023. So he had a lot of time to develop him. But I think the point is, right, is you are seeing that both styles can work, right? Yeah. You can see the high school quarterbacks are working. You can see that the portal works too. Okay. It's just you have to be able to evaluate those portal quarterbacks and you have to be able to actually go land them.
Yeah.
That's the hard part. Now, we've heard that the Austin Tucker guy is actually a pretty darn good recruiter.
That's what we heard. Yes, we did.
So I'm willing to see. And I think the tough thing right now is to project anything past this year because we don't know if Mike Norvell is going to survive past this year. So this all might be a moot point, right? But let's just say that if the Austin Tucker guy is a good recruiter, well, you were already going to kind of be pushing uphill to recruit a good quarterback to a Gus Malzahn offense.
Right.
Well, that's not the case so much with a Mike Norvell offense, right?
That's
so you can – it's an easier sell, and if you put a better recruiter in that position, maybe you can do some better things at the high school ranks.
And here's the thing. Oh, you make a fantastic point.
And at the transfer portal too, right?
You make a fantastic point because if you go back before Gus Malzahn comes – I know I hate to give credit to this Miami fan, Galaxy King, but you're kind of funny. But – he makes a point. He said, Mike is good at targeting good quarterbacks. He just don't land them. No, no, no. That's actually not true. Mike has been really good at targeting good quarterbacks and landing decent quarterbacks. He landed Luke Kermahawk. He landed the A.J. Duffy kid who was ranked very high. He landed the Purdy kid who was ranked was one of the top. Pretty decent quarterback. It's the development part that's been a problem.
Yeah.
And then when you brought Gus Malzahn in, then you couldn't land really good quarterbacks because no one wanted to play in a Gus Malzahn offense as a quarterback. So, yes, Mike has identified recruiting level good quarterbacks, meaning their star level told you that they should have been good. The problem has been, once they got here, Jesse, you make a fantastic point. It's like the Bermuda Triangle. This is where quarterbacks' dreams come to die, basically,
at
Florida State.
Yeah, it really does. And I mean, he said he's talking about portal guys, too. That's true. That's true. I mean, you know, you have settled a little bit, right? DJU was one of those kind of like, everybody told you that was probably not going to work, and you did it anyway.
Yep.
And then Tommy was – you took because that was a Gus Malzahn guy.
Right.
That's just – that's who he wanted, and that's who they went and got. And, you know, again, I think it also comes back to – yeah, and he's right. He identified Cam before Miami. Yeah, he was actually on campus at Tallahassee before he went to Coral Gables. Now, granted, there's some belief that maybe that was a little bit of a bargaining move.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, man, at the same time, it's – you're going to open things up to the quarterback position a little bit more where you're going to have stronger recruiters, which leads to stronger skill player, you know, attraction as well from the receiver position. And so I just think the problem is right now, in the most critical year for Mike Norvell, you got caught in kind of a tweener year, right? Because you went out and you signed a quarterback in Ashton Daniels who was a fit for the Gus Malzahn system. And maybe it wouldn't have been your wisest choice to run a more pass-heavy offense. So that is the one thing that I think could end up biting Mike Norvell this year. And again, is he even going to be here in 2027? You know what I mean? That's the thing. And now I do agree with T-Town on this one. You should have paid. They should have paid. Like Miami did. And I don't disagree with that, right? I don't know that we were going to spend $10 million or $6 million on a quarterback. But I think with the most important position, you could have spent $2 million or $3 million. But the difference is in a Gus Malzahn offense, why?
Why?
Like, remember, I would rather you spend $10 million on the offensive line and the running back room than the quarterback.
Yep.
But you were under the impression, again, that you were going to have Gus Malzahn as your offensive coordinator. Exactly. So you said, okay, well, we'll just get away with the $800,000 quarterback. I think, and this is just my opinion, if you went back and Gus said, prior to the transfer portal opening, look, guys, I'm done, right? We'll meet something in the middle, and I'm going to be out of here. I don't think you'd have taken Ashton Daniels, right? I think you'd have went for somebody a little bit different, but you got what you got now, and it made sense at the time. But going forward, that may not be the case, but will he even be here, and will it matter going forward? I don't know. He's got to win some games.
Right. Well, and the thing was, remember, Jesse, we heard going into the transfer portal season that FSU was willing to spend about $2.5 million on a quarterback. They were willing to spend that. I mean, yes, maybe they brought DJ Lagway on campus as kind of like a, hey, make us look good. We'll pay you a little bit. Let's kick the tires here. But they were willing to spend $2.5 million. That everybody was reporting that the budget for a quarterback for FSU was around $2.5 million. They brought in the Calandria guy, the former Virginia guy, right? And his asking price was well over $2.5 million. And they said no. They brought in DJ Lagway. And, you know, I don't know what his asking price was, but it wasn't enough for me to even say yes. So so he went to Baylor, right? They brought in somebody else. They brought in a couple different guys to look at that. And then they brought in Ashton Daniel. And I think this was, to Jesse's point, a Gus Malzahn heavy influence. This is the guy I want. This is who I believe, and that's what they went with, right? Now that Gus is gone, I think the quarterback competition, as Jesse said, I think it was, you know, Daniel's job to lose. I think it's real now. I think Marshall, I think Sperry, and I think Daniel are all equal going into this competition. And I'll say this, and I'll throw this back to you on this, Jesse. In my mind, this is just Michael, okay? In my mind, I'm trying to – my job – I know we believed his job was on the line last season.
Yeah,
but it has to be really on the line this season. My job's on the line. I am going to put the best person who gets me the most wins. And if that's Marshall and his skinny behind, guess what? Boy, we are hooking up a tank of fat lard to your mouth, and we're dropping it down. We're getting you. We're doing whatever we got to do to get you ready for the season. If you are our best option to win the most games we possibly can, I don't care. We are starting you. Sperry, if you're the best option, we're starting you. If Ashton Daniels ends up being the best option, we're going to figure out a way to make the offense work for you. That's one of the things. Remember, one of the slogans that I won't miss someday is this offense is built for playmakers. He's going to build the offense around his quarterback.
Yeah, and my thing is, like, I also don't want to come in here and just say that Ashton Daniels is basically a guy with no arms, right? Like, I don't want to say that. I mean, he went off against Vanderbilt. Right. He went off pretty decent against Alabama's defense for like 279 yards passing through the air, and they dropped like 9 passes or 7 passes in that game. So I don't want to say that he can't, but I'm with you, man. I'm putting a feed bag around Malachi Marshall's neck, and I'm putting him on that, you know, maybe that Nick Saban Alabama weight gaining program with the special sauce. And, like, if you can get 20 pounds on him and he looks like the legitimate passer that you think he is, that he looks like on film, even at the JUCO level, I'm rolling with that guy.
Yep.
Whoever gives you the best chance to succeed, because if you don't, you're going to be in trouble, you know, and that's the point. And I will say the one thing, a couple things that I want to address here in the comments, too, is Galaxy King is right. You know, when you talk about the guys, you had Bain on campus, man. You had Bolden, Travis Hunter, you had all that. You know, you had a lot of the guys that have went other places and done well. Look, the number one thing that has always been Mike Norvell's problem is the inability to close on a lot of the recruits, right? And that was something that we kind of hoped Gus would teach him how to do as a guy who had recruited big time before. But Gus didn't even leave the facility to recruit. He could only recruit when they were on campus. And so that is a big thing, right? But Mike Norvell has shown – now, this is pre-bad years – but he has shown the ability to go out and get some portal guys, right? Keon Coleman was a massive win for them in the portal because a lot of people wanted Jared Keon Burst. Coleman.
Everybody Jared wanted Jared Burst. Burst.
Was huge. So he was able to show that success. And then the other thing here is to T-Town's point is Gus was looking for other jobs before this. And we knew that. So, you know, this is one thing that I have said before is I think Mike's biggest problem here sometimes is, man, it's like a never ending, you know, you step on a rake and it hits you in the face. It's like, man, how many times are you going to step on the same rake before you step around it? You know what I'm saying? Like, you should have had an inkling that he was going to leave. And before you signed a quarterback, you should have been like, man, what are we really doing? What I'm saying? You also have a lot of missteps that you should have done the staff changes. You should have done these things. You should have done a lot of the other things that he just kind of made a lot of mistakes, which is why, to this point, you know, to Galaxy King's point, I'm not saying he's not Mike Norvell is a pretty decent coach. He's just maybe more fit for the G5 level based on how he recruits, right? I think that's part of it. But, you know, I mean, let's be honest. Mario is a great recruiter at Miami. But what would Mario do if he didn't have $30 million to throw at a roster, right? That's a big part of it, too. I mean, look at what you did with TVD when he was there. You ran him into the ground until you could buy a quarterback you didn't have to develop.
So I
think that's part of it, too, man. But overall, you know, again, I do just come back to, I think you're going to have a couple bottlenecks this season, but, you know, I think Mike's a capable play caller versus what you're talking about with Gus Norvell. Maybe there could have been more foresight into this, but I think he's a very capable play caller. And for those of you maybe just joining, we still think Mike Norvell should be fired, right? Yep. He should have been fired after 2-10. He should have been fired after Stanford, right? Yeah. We understand that. But you know, we've also to the point of Kurt Cignetti in Indiana, remember, I'm going to bring that up in a second.
I love you, Kate. I love
you. Kate from the top rope. But the thing is, you know, when you talk about it, man, like, I still think that he's a capable play caller from that perspective, because we've seen it in the past, right? You talk about Cignetti in Indiana.
Yep.
Remember, Mike Norvell laid that foundation. Yes, he laid that path back in like 2021 and 22 and 23 when everybody was like, oh, you can't build through the portal or whatever. Yep. You'll never win with the portal. Well, he did. He just got screwed out of a playoff chance, right? Yep. And Cignetti did not, because it was a 12-team playoff and they got in. So, yeah, I mean, I think that he can do it. It's just, can he recover from the pit that he's dug himself into? And he dug himself into that, right?
Yes, he did.
He is responsible, which is why he should have been fired. But he's the coach we got for 2026, so we got to make do with what we got. And now he's going to be calling plays again. But real quick, I want to bring up Kate from the top rope here.
Come on,
$30 million and still didn't win a conference championship, right? 7-5 Duke won.
That's right.
ACC championship, and Miami still does not have any. So yeah, I mean, they did not win the ACC. So you know what I mean? So that's funny. And I want to say one thing for Mike Norvell too. Like, maybe him being able to step out for a year to kind of take that weight off of his plate. You know, because again, man, we always talk about there should be a 30 for 30 on what happened between 2023 and 2024. What really happened? And so the thing for me is, I definitely wonder, like, where we know his mental state was not really, did not seem in a good place in 2024, right? Yeah. So, I mean, let's just say, like, Mike Vrabel, right? Now, I know he didn't get to take a year off like Mike Norvell didn't, like Mike Vrabel did. But, you know, you look, he got fired from Tennessee.
Yeah,
he took a year off. Yep. Now he's got the Patriots in the Super Bowl, right? A year
Unfortunately,
later.
Unfortunately, yeah.
And so, hey, chill now. No Pats. sorry you Rams didn't make it. Sorry for your loss.
Gosh.
But the thing is, like, maybe it was good for Mike Norvell to be able to just kind of step back for a year, take that off of his plate, and now he can kind of refocus. So maybe, right? And
maybe.
I was the first one, not the first one, because a lot of people wanted him after 2-10. But after that Miami game, I called for him publicly.
Yes,
it's time to fire Mike, right?
Yes,
he was fired long before Stanford.
Yep.
But I've said this till I'm blue in the face. Man, I don't care who is the head coach at Florida State. As long as they win games. The best thing for Florida State is to not pay $50 million for Mike Norvell to be fired. So do I think he's the guy long-term? No. But do I think his success is best for the long-term health of the program?
Yep.
Of course it is. Yes. So I'm always going to root for him to do well. Why? Because he's the head coach at Florida State. I still think he'd be fired.
Yep.
But he's what we got. And so I want him to succeed. And again, I saw somebody's point earlier. It's like, man, if you're going to go down in the year that feels like the year you're finally going to go down, you might as well do it your way. You might as well not do it. You know, you might as well not do it with Gus Malzahn's offense and or whoever else is calling plays. Like, you might as well just do it your way. And that way it feels like, you know, it feels like at the end of this year with Mike Norvell, whatever happens, you know, you had your mulligan with 2024. You had your chance to fix it with Gus Malzahn and them, and it didn't really work. This year, the weight of the season is on your back. You're now calling plays. You have now chosen all these things. And so at the point, like, if you get fired, it was on you.
Yep.
It was 100% your fault. And if you save your job, it was on you. Because here's the other, and I'll throw it back to you on this, but here was the other thing when, like, Kate said was stability and the long-term outlook of the program. My thing was, always when you reset the coaching staff after in 2025 with Gus Malzahn and Tony White, we know Tony White is trying to get a head coaching job at some point in his career. He's still young. He's interviewed for jobs before. Yep. We know Gus Malzahn was at the end of his coaching career, so yep. he probably wasn't going to be here very long anyway. So to me, what was going to happen when, let's say, 2025, you had won 9 or 10 games, right, and things started looking better. And then 2 years from now, Gus retires. Tony moves on, takes a head coaching job, and you're just stuck with Mike, right? Yep. At least now you're getting to see the man himself his job or lose his job.
I
think that's important because for the long term, like if you can turn this thing around and it's him that does it with the play sheet in his hand, you feel better about the long-term outlook of him still being here as your offensive-minded guy, right? Yep. Versus, oh, well, as soon as Gus leaves, we're in trouble.
Yep.
And so I think that's important too.
No, absolutely. I totally agree with you. Like you're going to get to see this flesh itself out. There's no more hiding behind, well, this or that or that. This is all for bear, right? I hate to use this analogy, but I'm watching a show called Mayor of Kingstown. And this is literally when they pull the curtain back in the execution room and they bring the prisoner out to put him on the execution table. This is all for bear, bro. You're going to see Mike in all his glory or his downfall right here, right now. And I do think, Kate, if you bring that comment back up, or the last comment she talked about, I do think, I know we want to dismiss this and say he should be over it, all this stuff, but there's layers to this thing, man. First of all, you have to think, Mike was not aggressive enough to make the changes he needed to make. He should have fired Atkins and Duggins after 2022. Yep. Everybody knows that he should have, but because they were winning, right? You know what they say, winning cures all, right? You win, it hides everything. So they were winning in 22, right? And they were winning in 23. Well, when he didn't do that, right? And then the snub happened, the snub broke the snub, and people make fun of us. I don't care. Let your blue blood program get snubbed from a playoff game that they earned and deserve to be in, and see if that don't break your coach, don't break your program, don't break the psyche of everybody. Basically, having the world tell you that you're second ran and you don't deserve to be in one of the most prestigious championship tournaments in the history of college football, right? Like, have that happen to you. I think the layer of not firing the guys when it happened, having the snub, and then basically having an attitude of, we're going to go prove everybody wrong that we should have been in. And they went out and got big name potential from big name programs, right? Not realizing there's a reason why these players, Malik Benson, there's a reason why Wardell Williams, there's a reason why I can't even think of the wide receiver's name from LSU. There's a reason why they're second and third string players, right? On these big name schools. And we went out and signed potential and a broken quarterback and a disastrous offensive line and everything. It literally, everything that could have went wrong in 24 went wrong, right? It was a disastrous season. Well, now here we are, 2026 coming into the season. You don't have the Gus excuse anymore, right? You don't have the Adam Fuller excuse anymore. You don't have the JP excuse anymore. You don't have the Atkins excuse anymore. The schedule is the schedule, right? It is what it is. Mike Neville, you have play calling duties back. You're going to figure out this quarterback. You got Herb Hand, who's produced the best offensive line you had since 2022 last year, and hopefully he can do that again. You got three capable receivers. You got a decent running back room. You got hopefully a good offensive line, right? If Tony White can be somewhat decent, more consistent on defense. I saw somebody earlier said that he believes that Tony White's going to run more of a 4-2-5, which is what Adam Fuller run, maybe play some zone behind that. Hopefully, if you got that, Mike, this is it, man. Go down swinging and swinging hard. And as we see the ship sink, we'll say goodbye and adieu to you. But as long as Mike Norvell is the head coach here, I'm going to support him until he's no longer the head coach. And this is what he's got.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I just want to see Florida State be good. That's it. And again, go back to where we looked at the schedule. I still think it's going to be a struggle to make a bowl this year because you have a really, really hard schedule. Now, I won't say like, you know, Florida's had the last 2 years, but it's a tough schedule. You know, you and the inability to win games on the road is on Mike Norvell.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like that's one of the things too that he's going to have to overcome. But at the same time, I feel like when you heard this news, the more we've had time to sit and think about it, the more we've had time to stew on this a little bit. Again, I think it raises your win ceiling. Yep. I do. I think it probably, the floor was pretty low, so I don't think it really drops your floor a whole lot.
Right.
But I do think it raises the ceiling a little bit because, you know, again, man, we talked about with Gus Malzahn's offense, it was one where you felt like you probably weren't ever going to get shut out.
Yep.
But you probably weren't also going to score more than 30 points very often just because that's just how his offense is. You know, and Mike Norvell has shown the ability to score 40 and 50 points against actual Power Four teams where that's typically reserved with Gus Malzahn against FCS and G5 opponents. And so I do think it does raise that floor a little bit. But 2024 also is fresher in our mind than 2022 and 2023, and you don't have Jordan Travis back there. So can he overcome the obstacles that he has to deal with this year and be able to produce that kind of offense? I don't know. That's what we're going to find out.
Yep.
I do think it's going to be interesting to see whether they close spring or not, because that was what most of us feel was a Gus Malzahn decision. I think it would be nice to be able to see a little bit of how this is playing out, because we saw the question come up is with Mike Norvell as the play caller. Do you think that Kevin Sperry has a legitimate shot? We discussed that earlier in the show. Yeah, I think it's a true open competition.
Oh, because I really do.
You, again, if in case he missed the first part where I said it, I don't think if Gus Malzahn had just, say, quit after the Florida game, I don't think you take Ashton Daniels. Right. I don't think he's on this roster right now.
Right.
So I do think it is open. But, man, you know, again, man, I really do think that it does slightly raise the floor or the ceiling to what this offense can be, because you've seen it, right, at Florida State. You've seen it happen here. And just Gus is, you know, outside of Cam Newton in 2013, what great offensive season has he really had? And so, you know, we'll see. There's no guarantee that Mike's going to be great. There's no guarantee that the defense is going to be great. The defense did actually get better throughout the course of last season, you know, with some personnel limitations that they had. So we'll see how that plays out too. That's going to be a big factor in it. But, you know, if you're to get into a 30-40 point race, a shootout, I feel much more confident with Mike Norvell calling plays than I do Gus Malzahn, because, you know, we talked about it when we did the breakdown of Gus Malzahn's offense. You know, a lot of people have even said where Gus Malzahn's offense is not built to come from behind, right? It's not built to go into a shootout. It's not built to be down by 20 points in the second half and come back. And yet we've kind of seen Mike Norvell's offense be able to score the 40 points, 30 points like we talked about. And so I think that gives you a better feeling if you get behind a little bit that you can throw the ball and get back into the game.
Right.
Whereas Gus Malzahn, it's like, man, you're going to need a smothering defense.
Yep.
So you can,
once you got behind,
stick to the thing because And he said from the get-go, from arriving here, from at a time at Auburn, he said, the thing is, I understand this offense looks weird at times, but you have to stay with it, right? You have to stay with the plan. You have to keep running the ball because that's how this offense works. You can't change what you do. That's a tough situation when you're playing from behind, right?
Yep.
And so you're going to need the defense to step up this year. But again, we've seen Mike Norvell win some shootouts, right? Yep. We've seen those Memphis teams put up some numbers. And so, you know, I mean, am I excited that Mike Norvell's the head coach at 2026 in Florida State? No. Am I more excited that he's calling plays than Gus Malzahn in 2026? Yeah, you could say that.
Yep.
You could say that.
That's fair.
So it's just, to me, I think you're going to have a little bit of it's the personnel that I'm waiting to see, right?
Yep.
But at the end of the day, as we get ready to kind of wind things down here, when you look at the good from Mike Norvell in 22 and 23 and the bad from Mike Norvell in 24, at least I'll say this. My main concern right now is the quarterback, because I think Malachi Marshall could win the job. Yep. I think that Kevin Sperry could win the job. I don't think any of these three are as good as Jordan Travis.
Right.
And so you're capping your upside a little bit there.
Right.
But I trust Herb Hand to produce a much better offensive line than Alex Atkins did in 2024. I trust that Deuce Robinson and Makai Dansey and Javon Boggs are going to be better than the receiving core that you had in 2024.
Right. Right.
I think Deuce is better than probably most of the receivers you had in
2023. Yeah.
And 2022.
Come on now.
And so you have the pieces. You can see it, right? You can have the pieces to see the upside potential of a Mike Norvell offense with those types of pieces, right? Yep. I mean, if you had Deuce in 24,
oof.
I don't know if it would have helped because he had to have time to get open. But if you'd had 2025's offensive line in 2024 with Deuce, who could actually catch a pass, you're not going 2-10.
No, you're right? not going 2-10.
It's just
all.
It was basically like, you know, in 2024, it's like, oh crap. And you just gotta go. And you had an immobile quarterback. So, you know, I'm just trying to be positive in a way, right? That's the thing. I'm just trying to be a little bit positive because dumping on the team constantly isn't gonna do anything to make it better. Right.
No.
We've already said that we feel like there's a good possibility this team's gonna not make a bowl this year.
Yep.
Mike's gonna get fired midseason and this experiment's gonna come to an end, right? I just want to see him do good. And so I'm going to try and find the positive in things, right? I'm just going to try and find the positive. So that's kind of where I feel with Mike Norvell, but man, I'll throw it to you. I'll give him some closing thoughts. We'll address any more questions as we get out of here. And then we'll kind of wrap this thing up as we've been going for about an hour and a half now.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. There's no point in us getting on here and just bashing on the team as much more than we already have just spoken. And we haven't been bashing the team. Like, we've just been speaking what is right in front of us, which is truth, right? This is truth. And sometimes truth hurts, right? Sometimes it's the fact of the matter that, look, you haven't been good the last two seasons. You've gone 2-10. You've gone 5-7, right? Yes, we talk about the snub, all that stuff. But prior to that, you went 3-6. You went 5-7. So you've only had two winning seasons in the 6 years that you've been here, right? You've missed on developing quarterbacks. Like, we've said all of these bad things.
The red flags are there.
The red flags are flagging, okay?
Yeah.
But at this point in time, you get a little bit of decent news. And I say this is decent because of the fact that the best we've seen of Florida State is when Mike Norvell is calling plays, he's humming, and he's got a decent defense behind him, right? As anyone would be, right? So if Herb Hand can produce, let's just say, even the same level of offensive line production we saw last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we can get a slightly more accurate QB this year, right? I mean, there is a world of possibility that we jump from 5 wins to 8 wins, right?
Yeah.
We could be shocked, okay? Remember, Indiana went from being the worst team to a playoff team in 1 year, okay?
Yeah, Arizona State, Jesse, 3-9 to a playoff
team.
What's your saying?
You love
it's not illegal to get better.
It's not illegal to get better. There's a possibility in this world that they can get better. Now, we've already been on record saying that we believe right now, as of right now, the floor is 3 to 5 wins. Okay, so we've already said it, but I'll say this in closing. Okay, a humming Florida State only works with a humming Mike Norvell. And Mike Norvell is at the head of this ship. And if he's going to go down, let the man go down doing what he does best, calling plays. And if he does go down, then it was a do. Thanks for 7 years of nothing besides 2 years, and we'll move on. But if he somehow resurrects this thing, we're at 8 wins, 9 wins, 10 wins, we're going to play off, whatever it is, we're going to look back to this moment right here, this moment, and say, I bet that was the turning point. Bet that was the turning point.
Yeah, and I want to say two things real quick too. When you're talking about the offensive line difference, right? I just was looking it up on PFF, and they have a stat called offensive line pass block efficiency, which is weighted towards pressures and sacks and everything like that. In 2024, the offensive line that was produced was 124th of 134 teams, right? In pass block efficiency. Last year, Herb Hand put together the offensive line that was ranked 24th in pass block efficiency. So again, man, and in 2023, Florida State was 32nd.
Mm.
So you can see the problem of why 2024 happened. So if you can have an offensive line that gets back to, let's just say, top 30, top 35 in pass block efficiency, who can actually protect the quarterback for more than 2 seconds, then, like, you know, I mean, right. you can see it. You can see it, right? Deuce is a proven 1,000-yard receiver.
Absolutely.
There's no guesswork to that, right? We've seen it. And the second thing that I want to say in closing here is, I think you hit the nail on the head, right? In 2024, and Mike acknowledged this, his body language was awful. He looked defeated. He did not handle things very well at all. He didn't handle adversity well. And, you know, in 2023 and 2022, one of the biggest things he talked about was how you respond to adversity. That team, and Kate brought this up earlier, and I want to make sure I acknowledge her point earlier, is where you need to see guys like Deuce Robinson and all that step up in the leadership roles. Because as everybody knows, the best teams in college football are player-led, coach-pushed, not coach-led, player-pushed, right? And so the thing is, to me, you need to see, like, in 23, if you had some of the BS slacking that you had and loafing in 24 and all that, do you think Jared Verse is going to let that happen? Braden Fisk going to let that happen? You know, do you think right. Do you think that some of the guys from back in the day in 2013 and all that, like Telvin Smith, you think you're going to slack around Timmy Jernigan? You're going to slack around on those guys?
Lit up.
Exactly. And so I think that if you can have the player leaders step up, like a Deuce Robinson, you know, like maybe some other guys on the defense who have come back, if you can have those guys step up, be vocal leaders, and if you can have Mike Norvell get back to his self, right? Like, I'll tell you right now, I'm going to probably know how many games we're going to win in the first game of the season.
Yep.
Like, if I see Mike Norvell, maybe not New Mexico State, but maybe in the SMU game, right? If you see something go wrong, right? Ashton Daniels throws a pick six and Mike Norvell's over there like just bewildered like a deer in the headlights.
Yep.
Buckle up. It's going to be a long season. It's going to be a long day. But if you see Killer Mike come back on the sideline.
Ooh, Killer Mike.
Like he used to have that look on the sideline, like a Cignetti look. You know what I'm saying? Like when the Deuce Spann thing happened, he chases him over the sideline and they're getting into it and all that stuff. Like if you see that Mike come back, the wins will come back too. And I firmly believe that. I still would have fired him. That doesn't change that fact. But if he can fix the mental aspect and the attitude that he had in 22 and 23, I think you will see Florida State get better under Mike Norvell, right? And if not, he's got to go.
Got to go.
He's got to go because he should have been gone. Should have been gone anyway, right? You should have been gone anyway. But I think we're probably going to close it down here, guys. It's been about an hour and a half, man. We got like over 200 people watching right now total between all the outlets. So we really, really appreciate that. We'll get it out for podcast-only listeners coming up tomorrow. Also, my guy Jeremy from Rock and Knoll said Michael has him ready to run through some stadiums here. So tomorrow night, Tuesday at 8:30, I will be actually joining Jeremy.
Let's go.
Michael, you're invited to come too if you're not doing anything. So we'll see. And it's going to be an old therapy session, right? We're going to have a panel. I don't know how many people he's got up to now. I don't know. There's going to be at least 3 to 5 of us or something like that. We're going to be around and just having some fun with it. So I definitely, if you guys are over there, Rock and Roll channel, if you guys want to check that out. If you enjoyed this one, right? If you enjoyed this show, I would love, and yes, Kate, of course, always. Obligatory FFM on here. But if you guys are enjoying this, man, we would greatly appreciate a like and subscribe on the channel. We just crossed 2,800 subs. We're really, really trying to push for that 3,000 mark before the season gets here, man. It would really mean a lot to us. We appreciate all you guys rocking with us. And, you know, a rate and review on the podcast if your podcast-only listener helps as well. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor, like the video. We really appreciate you guys hanging out. Shout out to all our members in the chat.
Yeah.
I saw Mike here. I saw Ralph, my guy Spartan Knoll here. Kate was, of course, here.
Yeah.
My guy Kenny that I ran into at Sam's the other day, man. So I appreciate everybody who's been blowing the chat up, man. We really appreciate you guys. I had fun with this one, Michael. You know, we don't get
this
to do lives a whole lot. We'll have to start doing these more because they're fun because we get a chance to interact with you guys. But you know what, man? The thing is, at the end of the day, like you said, you finally got a bit of decent news. We don't know how that news is going to work out long term, but like, not everything has to be doom and gloom.
Correct.
It just doesn't. Correct. You know what I mean? Wait, let it play out. Like, if we start 1-3, 2-4, okay.
Trust us. We'll be on here.
We'll be the first ones to say fire him because we tried to fire him last year, but we're not the AD, so we didn't. And I don't have $50 million, so I wasn't able to do that.
Are you sure you ain't got $50 million?
Man, my bank account ain't set up like that. But we do really appreciate you guys watching. And yep, with that being said, man, we got schedule breakdowns for you guys on the channel. We got off-season grades. We got quarterback battle talk. We got a whole lot of stuff
coming up.
You
wrote a great article on this news about Gus Malzahn.
I also did write an article on our website, plantthespear.com. And Kate mentions also it's almost baseball time.
Yes.
I'm going to drop a quick teaser for you guys. If you're still watching this tomorrow, Tuesday, it'll probably be out either Tuesday afternoon or Wednesday. I will be recording a baseball season preview with my guy, Gary Davis.
Nice.
Lead member of Animals of Section B. If you know baseball, FSU baseball, you probably know who Gary is. We're going to be previewing the season for you guys tomorrow. So make sure you come back and check that out. Also, I always forget to mention our sponsor, Michael, but Alumni Hall FSU is our title sponsor. If you guys are looking for Noel gear, that's where this came from. That's where Michael's stuff came from. Make sure you check those guys out. 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee, or shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU page and make sure that you use code SPEAR to save 10%. That's online or in store. So, guys, again, we appreciate you rocking with us. As always,
go Noles.
Go Noles, baby.